Hello, this is Jesse Liberty, and this is yet another podcast. Okay, today I have John Papa, former evangelist for Silverlight at Microsoft, and currently a Microsoft RD, remind me to ask you about that, author of at least 3 courses for Pluralsight, and John Galloway, who needs no introduction, is the developer evangelist in the Azure group, working on ASP.NET MVC, I think. Did I get that right, John Galloway?
Yeah.
Close enough. Hi, John Papa.
Hi, Jesse Liberty.
Welcome. And before we get into what you're working on or any of that, you're a Microsoft RD?
I am told I am, yes.
Now, that's like a super MVP, right?
The RD is a secret super group. It's kind of like Fight Club. We're allowed to say that we're in it, but we can't talk about it.
I see. It does stand for regional director.
Yeah. In all seriousness, I don't know what it stands for other than it's a regional director.
They told me that I had to be out of Microsoft for a year before I could even become an MVP.
Yeah, they told me that too about me.
And then they made you an RD.
Yes.
And when
I'm an RD, but I'm not an MVP.
Oh, that's interesting. I didn't know that was possible.
I don't know. There's a lot of things that are impossible. It's kind of like Ripley's Believe It or Not. I think my episode is airing pretty soon.
Okay, so tell me about your newest course, because that'll be a great departure point. You have a new course out for Pluralsight?
Yeah, I've been going crazy with Pluralsight lately. And the latest course I have, it just came out 2 days ago. It's called JS Render Fundamentals. And it's all about JavaScript templating.
And how is it that, and I mean this in all seriousness, how is it that a guy who is totally focused on Silverlight for years has been able to switch over to that level of expertise in JavaScript?
Because it's all exactly the same code. No, just kidding. So
don't confuse me, John.
XAML is JavaScript, Jesse. So the real thing is, it comes down to, where's your career heading? What's exciting? What's new? Where are the areas that people need to learn? And my nature is evangelism. So one thing I like to do is training, writing, teaching, mentoring. And there's a lot of people out there who are confused as heck. And they want to know, what do they do next? And right now, the job markets that I'm seeing in my small world don't see a lot of XAML skills other than the new stuff coming with Windows 8. And a little bit of Windows Phone. So there's not a lot of Silverlight WPF out there. And with that, there's a lot of new JavaScript, jQuery, CSS, HTML opportunities.
And how did you get smart enough about JavaScript that quickly?
Well, it's not like it just kind of fell out of the sky one day. JavaScript's been around for, what, at least a month or two? No. So JavaScript's been around, and I've done it before in the past. And I actually ran away from JavaScript back in the early, probably the mid-2000s, before jQuery came out. And right about the time I was getting back into it with jQuery is when Silverlight came out. So I kind of switched gears back to Silverlight to say, hey, what's this new shiny object? And then when I left Microsoft, actually about 6 months before I started leaving Microsoft, I started getting back into the JavaScript world, mostly because of the Metro apps with the HTML. And I wanted to see if I could port stuff that I had written in JavaScript over. But then, you know, I really got into, it'd be really cool if I could take all the patterns that I've learned over years and years and years and too many years in development with .NET and figure out, how can I translate some of that goodness, some of that stability and maintainability and readability over to the JavaScript and HTML world? And so that's what I've been doing for the last year and a half, 2 years.
You know, John, as you're saying that, so it's not like moving, I mean, it's not like the two are completely unrelated, I guess, as you're pointing out, that, you know, you've got similar, you've got backend code, you've got different layers that are common and patterns that are common across them all. You've got UI layer. And so, I mean, a lot of the things, like JavaScript definitely has gotten a lot more structured. I mean, the way people have approached JavaScript over the past, I mean, definitely since jQuery came out, but, you know, over time, it's gone from like, let's whack some script together to like pretty solid frameworks and pattern focus. So, I mean, I guess I've felt similarly that they're not two different worlds, really. They're, you know, different facets of similar kind of development. Do you think the same thing?
Yeah, I do, John. And I know we've had similar backgrounds and things. And one of the things I've noticed is, let's take a Silverlight app for a moment and just talk about it. So we've got some app. And let's say you've got SQL Server in the back end, you've got your Entity Framework, maybe you're using WCF or you're using MVC Actions. Let's leave Web API out of it for a minute. Maybe you've been building this thing up. And then on top of it, maybe you've built a Silverlight app that talks to all of that. That's got its MVVM framework and MVVM Lite in there, and you're using all sorts of patterns and converters and things up top. and maybe behaviors and Blend. All looks great, works wonderful. So could you build something like that that works now on many platforms? So the idea with Silverlight was I can put it in any browser. Could you do that with HTML? Well, let's try it. Let's leave the whole backend. Let's leave it with SQL and Entity Framework and MVC. Or for those guys who like to build on other platforms, that's fine too with some RESTful interface. And now let's take those same patterns that we had with Silverlight and let's try to build that on top of the same kind of services. And that's what's interested me is like, wow, it's really the same thing, but I'm getting to do it all over again. So in a lot of ways, it's like a kid in a candy store for me. I get to do the whole Silverlight experience again with a whole new platform.
And what was your approach to taking that path? What was your approach to coming up to speed? Because one of the things that I note is that you have to come up to speed on a number of technologies at the same time. There's JavaScript and HTML5 and CSS. So how did you thread your way through all that?
Yeah, that's a good question. It's one of the things I've been trying to go back on, and I wish I documented a little bit more, is how did I get back up to speed? And to be fair, it wasn't all brand new to me. And to be honest, I bet you most developers have at least some experience with those things, just not as deep as they want. One of the things I've done is recently, by accident, I was thrown into a JavaScript for .NET developers session. The speaker became very, very ill suddenly, and I had to substitute for them. I was like, you know, this is a great session. Let me go figure out what he was supposed to be teaching and kind of give my own flair to it. And through that session, I tell you, it was one of the most interactive ones I've had in a while. And it was great to hear, you know, teaching JavaScript to people who were advanced developers who were just trying to migrate from .NET over to the HTML and JavaScript world. And the questions they had were really awesome. And it was just a very intoxicating environment. And so it made me start thinking about, you know, this is a great opportunity because there's so many people out there who are interested in these things, but they don't know where to start. You know, do you learn HTML5? And honestly, you know, HTML5, I've learned some things on it, but you can learn most of what you need to in a day in HTML5. CSS, that's something that, quite frankly, I liken it to Blend. You know, if you don't have the design skills, your CSS skills probably aren't going to be as great either. but, you know, you got to just kind of bang away at it and at least know where to go to look. That's really your layout and your styling and your animations and your behaviors if you're using CSS 3. And then the JavaScript side is really where I've been focusing most of it because that's where we wrote most of our code. With .NET, we did it with .NET and Silverlight. And I just basically been picking up, you know, first learn JavaScript really well, then learn the JavaScript patterns. So don't try to jump into patterns before you get to, before you know the language. And then once you get beyond the patterns, then just try it. I started writing a lot of apps, and some of them failed miserably and never saw the light of day, and the others started getting a lot better.
And what kind of patterns have you been discovering in JavaScript?
So there's a lot of fancy names for patterns, and Jesse, you know me, I'm not a big let's throw out a bunch of acronyms and impress the people kind of guy, but there's the ones I focus on are basically the ones that are similar to the .NET world that I liked. So I like having things that do separation of concerns. Anytime I can create some kind of, and I'll use .NET words, classes that I can segregate out into layers. So I can say, this thing is a view model, for example. And then this thing is some kind of a data service that the view model uses to go get its data from maybe a REST call or from wherever. You know, separate those things out. I look at that separation of, I'll call them objects in the JavaScript world, as a great place to start with your patterns. And from there, you can read, there's a book called, I think it's called JavaScript Patterns, actually, by O'Reilly. I forget the name of the author. And I think he's from Russia. And it's a great book that goes through things like the revealing module pattern, the prototype pattern, the observer pattern, things like that, which are really interesting. And quite frankly, there's probably 100 patterns in that book. And there were maybe 5, literally, that I was like, you know what? These are really important. The rest of them are all derivations or variations. That's why I get into like the module patterns really big. I do a variation called the revealing module, which basically allows you to have public and private properties in an object.
I'll just interrupt you long enough to say the book is JavaScript Patterns by Stoyan Stefanov, I think it is.
Yes.
And that's an O'Reilly book, just as you say.
Yeah, and it's a very short book. It's a very short read. And before I read that, I read the Douglas Crockford, The Good Parts, JavaScript, The Good Parts book, mm-hmm. which is another good one. He's very strict on how JavaScript should be, so you definitely want to read it with a grain of salt, and that's kind of the extreme version of JavaScript, and I do believe in most of what he says there, but there are people who feel that it's a little too overboard. That's the thing with JavaScript. If you ask any 10 people how do they write it, you're going to get 20 answers.
Now, one of the pieces of advice that I had been given not long ago on one of these shows was that it may be time to skip learning JavaScript and go directly to learning jQuery. Do you disagree with that?
You know, just to cut in, I'm sure I was one of the people that said that, and So, John, you can smack me down if I'm overboard here. But what I was saying was that, you know, JavaScript on the face of it, I think a lot of us looked at it and thought, okay, this is simple script, and I'll just whack some stuff together, and thought of it similar to like VB script in an ASP.NET, you know, context. Like, how hard could it be? And then there's a huge amount of depth to it, and patterns people layer over it, and the functional nature, and it's a very interesting language, and people are compiling all kinds of crazy things down to JavaScript, and it just, you can, as you said, there's a lot of different ways you can use it. And so I said, rather than get too hung up on trying to master this language, which frankly, I don't think I'm ever going to master, you know, I can use pretty well and I can do a lot with it, but I don't feel like I'm a master of it at all by any stretch. And so, you know, I feel like, you know, it's good to get kind of an appreciation for it. And then by using something like jQuery, you can see some kind of modern patterns that people are using, and then kind of fold that back into, you know, like have a lay of the land to then dig back into JavaScript, the language.
Yeah, I don't think it's a bad approach by any means. And to a lot of extent, John, I agree with you. There's a lot of times I'm writing JavaScript and I'm actually writing jQuery, which is just a wrapper that, the way I explain jQuery to people is, jQuery is what makes JavaScript bearable for a lot of people. You know, jQuery wraps it up, and the great example of that is always the document find element by ID, you know, all that stuff. If you want to write specific JavaScript to find elements based upon the DOM that you're in and the browser that you're in and the version that you're in, you're going to write a lot of if-then syntax to figure it out or deal with a lot of switch cases or other logic. Using jQuery, it just does that for you. So it kind of dumbs it down. And again, it's a wrapper, so it's slightly slower, but those people get on performance hits on it. You know, I want to smack them anyway, but jQuery makes things a lot easier. So I definitely agree with learn jQuery. I think, you know, I'm at a company now where I'm working with a lot of developers, and they went through an HTML5 course. And one of the things that amazed me is after going through this course, they learned HTML, CSS, JavaScript, and jQuery. The two things they're most impressed with after this class were the one day on jQuery, where they're like, wow, this stuff is really much easier. I could do that. And then they did a half an hour on Knockout, which they were like, this makes the whole data binding thing easy. So that's been the two biggest impressions I've had from people learning it. It's just watching them going, you know, the light bulbs go on when they use jQuery and they use things like Knockout.
Now, there are a lot of libraries. So how do you find your way through that forest of different JavaScript libraries?
Well, you know, at first it's like you're drowning from a fire hose, and you throw up and you ask somebody, how do you know which library to use? And then all the people who are in the know are just like, ha, 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 you just do. And, you know, you feel like you're drowning there. The best way that I've been able to figure out navigating it is figure out, what do you want to do? What is it you want? Like, let's take, for example, data binding. I mentioned Knockout. There's a good dozen libraries out there that I'm aware of that do data binding in some way, shape, or form. And so which one do you choose? The most popular one, the one that another company's behind. I don't go for, you know, who's behind it, Microsoft, Google, Twitter, etc. I go for which one solves my needs, which one seems to have community support. So I go to places like Stack Overflow and see, hey, who's using this thing? You know, what kind of questions are out there? I look up on GitHub and see what kind of issues and community contributions there are. And then I just ask around and see somebody use this. That's a lot of what I do. And I also don't get hung up on when somebody tells me, you know what, you know, there's a better library. Okay, great. That's nice. Next time, maybe I'll look at it. But the one I'm using now, it does my job. So, you know, the biggest thing to get over, my point is the hurdle of don't worry about there might be a better one. If you have one that's working for you and doing the job, stick with it.
Wow, that's great advice for just about anything in development. You know, it's paralyzing sometimes to start in something and there's like, wow, where do I start and what's the best thing? Data access, or, you know, what kind of mobile strategy, or all kinds of things. And people debate, you know, on and on and on. But the answer, like you're saying, there's, you find something that serves your needs and you can always move to another thing later, or you'll get another shot at it, you know, and just get something that works and move on.
Yeah. Just build it so it's modular and, you know, use those. If you stick with separation of concerns as the core principle of your patterns and forget all the others, to me, that's the core one I never deviate from. If you do that and you stick with it, everything else kind of flows off of it. And then later on, whether it's a year from now or 10 years from now, you can look at that code and be like, you know, maybe it's time to swap out, you know, link to SQL for Entity Framework version 5 or whatever it might be, you know, whatever the technology might be in that case.
Let's go back to the courses that you built for Pluralsight. Tell me a little bit about what they take us through.
So the most recent one was JS Render Fundamentals. It's a beginner course with templating. And if you're not familiar with templating, what I liken it to is think of the WPF or XAML world with Silverlight, where you've got data items, item templates, and you've got something you want to repeat like in a list view. So a template in JavaScript is the same way. You've got items that you're going to want to repeat over and over again. So you can use templates to create these and then, you know, list them out one time, or you can list them out 400 times in a row if you're in some kind of a list view. And that's what JS Render does for you. And there's lots of templating engines, as John and I were talking before we aired, out there that are very popular. Underscore, Mustache, jQuery templates, JS Render. There's lots of them. And they're all very popular. Even Knockout even has its own native templating engine built into it. But the thing that differentiates to me with JS Render from the others is that it's the fastest one I've seen so far, and it's really easy to use.
I like that combination.
Yeah, it's really easy. I like how easy it is, and that's why I wrote the course on it. But the speed is impressive. I mean, how many of us have had somebody tell us, we need to see 5,000 items in this list? And then we say, you really don't need to see 5,000 items. And then the customer says, I pay your bills, so yes, I do. And, you know, you try virtualization, all that. They don't like it. They want 5,000 items. You go back to it. And then you use something to print out 5,000 items. And if you're actually manipulating the DOM in HTML, when every time you touch the DOM, there's a cost. And it's really expensive. So when you're doing demos of 10 rows in some kind of an event, it's always quick. But what JS Render does is it says, let me render out the template completely as a string. It does everything through string manipulation. And then at the end, you can take that entire template and put it in the DOM in one shot. And by doing it that way, the speed on it is phenomenal. And it really works fast. And it's, as I said, it's really easy to use.
Okay, so JS Render is for rendering data templates in something like a collection.
Yeah, you can do collection, or think of it like regions on a page.
Mm-hmm.
You might have regions of like master details. You might have a template for the master list with a collection. And on the right-hand side, you might have a template for what does the detail view look like. And so it could be like views.
And how much of that is JS Render doing?
JS Render would be able to take the data that you pass to it. So it takes three steps. You have to have data, some kind of JSON, preferably. You have to have a template that's defined, which you define, you know, how's this thing supposed to look? And then you kind of plop in the data elements where you want it. And then the third thing is, okay, after it's rendered, where do you put it?
And how do you define what it looks like? What language are you using to do that?
You're using JavaScript. You're using HTML. So you define your template out, one element of the template using HTML, and then inside of that HTML, you just put in the JS Render tokens, which are using the double squiggly braces.
And those are replacement tokens.
Yeah, think of it like in Razor, where you got the little at sign or whatever you call that thing, or in XAML, you know, you get your little binding.
John, how would you, you always see or frequently see mentioned together JS Render and JS Views. JS views,
plural.
Yeah. So what's the distinction and how do those fit together?
So that's a great question. First of all, JS Render is beta, and it's been beta. And it's only thing holding it back, when I talked to Boris Moore, who's the creator of it, is from going RC basically, is he wants to release it with JS views kind of together. And JS Render has been ready for a bit, but it's the templating side. The piece that's missing with JS Render is there's no data binding with JS Render. It's simply just putting data on the screen. It's rendering it out. It's formatting data. And you can have the data be in input fields, so it could be editable. But if you want that two-way data binding and observability that you get, then you need JS Views. So JS Views is basically, think of the old world where we had Data Link. Was that what it was called, John? It was jQuery templates, I think, Data Link.
Yeah, there was one. I mean, there have been quite a few, as you said earlier, but Data Link was one, yeah.
And Data Link never really came to fruition, but basically JS Views is the data binding side, and then JS Render is the templating side, and together they make a powerful engine. But it's worth saying JS Views is not yet even beta.
So how do people use JS Render in the meantime?
Well, JS Render in itself, in the meantime, is just templating. So if you need to template data, and it's equivalent to something like Underscore or Mustache or jQuery templates, where it's purely just rendering the data out to the screen. So if you don't need data binding, then you could just use JS Render.
Okay. What else are you working on, John?
But before that, I had the Knockout course, which we put out, which is data binding, as we've talked about in the past. And my next course, which I've just started working on, is kind of an end-to-end scenario. Instead of one technology, I'm building on one that's going to use MVC Web API in the back end with Entity Framework and SQL. And it's going to use the Web API to spit out some JSON. And then on the client side, I'm going to use a bunch of JavaScript libraries to talk to it and basically put some patterns in place, similar to what we used to do with like Silverlight and WPF, and create a client-side framework that handles rendering the data, doing view models. I'm going to use a framework called Amplify, which will help me talk to Ajax and do caching of data. I'm going to use that also for storing data locally and caching it in the data store. I'm also going to use a framework called MockJSON, which will help me create mock data. Remember the old days, Jesse, in Silverlight when we had Blend and we'd have design time data?
Yes.
MockJSON basically allows us to do the same kind of thing where we have our Ajax calls through Amplify. It actually says, you know, instead of getting the real data, go get some mock data. So I'm going to show how to do that. I'm going to use a routing framework called SAMI that's going to help me build in the single page applications, or people call them SPAs these days. And I'm going to use Knockout for the data binding aspects. And I'm going to split it all out with some good patterns and show people some good practices and how they can basically do the same thing they're doing in .NET, but in the JavaScript world.
That sounds ambitious, at least.
It is. And I've actually had to cut some things out. I had a bunch of stuff in there about doing responsive design, which I'll probably still keep some of it, which is building the site to work on mobility or on a desktop. So I'll probably have some of that in there. But I was also going to do SignalR and QUnit in there for unit testing. But I think I'm going to cut those two pieces off for another course later.
You know, as you're talking through that, so I'm thinking back a bit to Jesse's earlier question about how do you find all those libraries out? And you know, I've kept up with those over time, but it does sound like quite a bit. And do you see people like packaging things together? Like, for instance, I know like Twitter Bootstrap or some of these, you'll get kind of like a larger framework that solves several things at once. I mean, Knockout, as you mentioned before, does that too, where it's got its own templating and it's got its own, you know, binding and that kind of thing. Do you see that kind of thing where people say, you know, okay, here's Amplify, here's, you know, JS Render, here's, you know, and kind of package things a bit?
Yeah, I've seen a lot of people go one way or the other, where they either use, let's say, 10 different libraries. And like in this one, I think I mentioned Knockout, Amplify, MockJSON, jQuery. I guess you got to count that as a library, right? And mm-hmm. SAMI. So there's five main libraries, and then Bootstrap, so six. And those are the ones I'm thinking of using in there. And that some people would like that approach where you take, you know, the best of each one and you kind of integrate them. I personally like that because then you can pick what you want and leave behind the rest. It's kind of like MVVM Lite. That's why I like Laurent Bunyon's framework, because you can pick what you want and not touch the rest. Mm-hmm. The other approach is more the, you know, the framework approach, as you mentioned, where you get something like a backbone, where you've got something that does a lot of things for you. And there's no downside to that, really, unless if you want something that does everything. But I found it's easier for me to learn a new JavaScript library if I know it just does this thing or that thing. Like Knockout just does my data binding. You know, SAMI just does my page navigation. Amplify just does my Ajax calls. If I can learn just that one thing that each of these libraries does, it makes it easier for me personally to learn it, as opposed to taking on a framework that, like, think of Prism in the WPF world. Mm-hmm. You know, every time you try to get into Prism, people are like, oh my gosh, it's so much, you know, and it's great, but
yeah.
So it's really, to me, it depends on your personality.
The cost of entry is still really, really high for anybody who is listening to this show and pulling their hair out thinking, how am I ever going to be able to begin to create an application for HTML5 JavaScript?
It is. It's definitely, I'm not going to sugarcoat it. It's hard to get into initially. I think, you know, looking back, the first thing I would do is, again, make yourself familiar with HTML and what CSS is. And don't spend a lot of time with those things. Just understand where they are and when you need to go figure something out. You know, bookmark some good references on the web. The next thing is, and I really do believe in, you know, read up on what JavaScript is, read the Doug Crockford book, then read the Patterns book that you mentioned before that I can't pronounce his name. And then we'll put that on your blog, right?
Yes, absolutely.
So, you know, read those things and understand those patterns. And then after that, just start experimenting. Forget all these JavaScript libraries. Learn jQuery a little bit. Do JavaScript. Write some things out. You know, and then just start pulling in libraries as you need it. And when you start seeing redundant code, that's a trigger to me of, you know, there's got to be a better way to do this. And that's how I came across Knockout. Because before Knockout, I was writing all this jQuery to push data elements from my objects up into my screen. And then all this jQuery to pull it back out. I'm like, you know, if I was doing Silverlight, this would be like no code. And then I got into Knockout. I'm like, hey, Knockout does that. It makes it like Silverlight for me. So I try to relate what I do in JavaScript to things I've done in my past. It's just natural in human nature. And I would not recommend anybody to try biting off like all six frameworks I just mentioned. I would say, you know, pick one, learn it, see if you like it. If you don't, throw it away.
Now, you've been relating an awful lot of stuff back to Silverlight and to WPF and XAML programming. And what's your sense of XAML programming and the future there at this point?
There's the loaded question right there, huh?
It is kind of the killer question, isn't it?
Yes.
I'm sorry, the call's breaking up.
So where is XAML heading? Let me give you two interpretations of that I have. And these are purely just my opinion of observations. First, I personally feel like XAML is still going to stick around. I think there is a future for it in things like Windows 8 and in Windows Phone. Do I think there's going to be a lot of new development on Silverlight and WPF? Probably not. I personally feel that way. Are apps that are written in Silverlight and WPF need to disappear? Absolutely not. They're great. It's a great platform, and it does the job. The other thing I see, though, is we just had a code camp here, and I live in Orlando, Florida. We just had code camp here last month, and I was asked to do the keynote. And I said, you know, do me a favor and send me the stats of all the sessions you've had in the last 5 years at every code camp. I wanted to see which topics disappeared each year and which ones were new. And every year, there were three or four topics that were really hot the year before and completely dropped off the face of the earth the next year. And of course, one of them that I was expecting to see was Silverlight. Last year was huge. And then this year, there wasn't a single session on Silverlight. Nobody submitted it. Not only did they not pick one, but nobody submitted a Silverlight session out of almost 200 entries. So that tells me right there that while people are clamoring about where's XAML, the same people aren't even trying to use it. You know what I mean?
Right. The exception I would take is that there's a whole set of developers who are not necessarily going to code camps, not necessarily listening to this podcast, who are enterprise line of business developers who are building Silverlight WPF applications today because today they don't feel necessarily that HTML5 can do what they need for their application.
Yeah, and part of that is being plugged in, I agree. And I work with a lot of those kind of people, and they're good developers. And I've had a couple people come to me even this week saying, we have a new app, and part of my job is to help them kind of vet out their project. We have a new app. This is the technology we're going to use. We're thinking of Silverlight because it works. And my answer is, okay, go for it. You know, and it's not, you know, well, you can't use Silverlight. It's just because maybe there's not as much activity and love in that space as there used to be doesn't mean you shouldn't use it.
Well, I think, too, that there's, you know, like you were talking before about the code camps. And if I look around at blog posts, I every day find a new blog post for the homepage of the ASP.NET website. And everything now is web API. Like, it's there's 20 new posts every day on web API and very little else. But if you talk to the majority of people, you look on the forums or you talk to people doing development, huge amount of it is web forms, ASP.NET web forms. And you don't see a whole bunch of new books, and you don't see a whole lot of, and there are new features rolling out, but for the most part, you know, it's a pretty big platform and not a huge amount of change. And that's probably a lot of the reason why the people that are using it like it. It's kind of a solved problem. You know, it's like it's a known quantity.
It works.
Yeah. And so I would not at all, like, I mean, for that one reason, like I'm know that there are people still starting projects in Silverlight, and you know, it's a solid platform, and it's, you know, it's I don't know, you know, like there's not a whole lot of new surprises to it to learn.
It always gets back to, John, as you say, you know, what problem are you trying to solve? If you're trying to build an application that needs to talk to some scanner device or a camera or other, you know, hardware, you know, WPF's a great opportunity right there. Silverlight in some cases too. If you're trying to build just a web-based app that's got to work in every browser and it's got to be a completely rich UE and you can do Silverlight, go for it. But if you need to go cross devices, you know, iPads and Android and all that other stuff, you know, then you're not going to use Silverlight or WPF. You're going to use something like HTML5. And, you know, it's really, people don't like the answer. It depends, but that's the truth and you need to get over it.
I accept your answer in terms of what's in the best interest of the project you're about to build. But I think if we're honest, a lot of people, the real question in their mind is, what's going to be best for my career in the next few years? Yes. Where should I be spending my time so that I'm not in a dead end or stuck or have wasted my time over a few years?
Yep. Your two questions are, what is the project got to do? And then what skills are on your development team or company? I mean, you can't discount that.
Right. And for that latter question, it's not as obvious that you're going to get the same answer.
Right. Mm-hmm. We had a team recently that came to me, and they were really they really want to try to do HTML5 and all this on this project with, when I say HTML5, I'm talking HTML5, the marketing term. I'm talking JavaScript, jQuery, Knockout, things like that. And they wanted to do it, but this guy was afraid while he's ready to make the jump and learn some new things, his team is deeply involved in XAML, and they haven't done any of this other stuff. And I said, we can invest together, and I can help you and your team get up to speed on these things, or you can just stick with XAML. I said, but you know, you've got to make that choice. I said, either one I'm okay with. It's going to work either way. It's what do you want to get out of it? Mm-hmm. You know, in the end, they chose XAML, and it was because they didn't have the time to learn those other things.
It's, you know, a lot of it is that, like, for some developers and some groups what you're working on, project types and all that, there's value, and people really enjoy kind of like, what's the newest thing? And hey, we tried, you know, we use Mustache on this one. Now we're going to use this instead. And we're, you know, and like, that's fine. And then there's like you were talking earlier about, XAML, you know, one thing I've noticed doing some Windows 8 development lately, like, it is pretty, it's the same language. It's pretty repeatable. And for somebody moving from Silverlight or Windows Phone development, like, it, you know, I mean, you learn some new things and there's some quirks, but it's pretty quick, you know, to jump right into it. So, I mean, I guess a lot of it comes down to what you personally and your team and your project types value is. Do you want a known quantity and something repeatable, or do you want to be constantly like picking up what's the newest, you know, what's the best thing now? What's, I don't know, you know, the new developments and jumping on those.
Well, that makes good sense. And that might be a good place to leave it, because I think that we have come full circle to that conclusion that there are a couple different approaches here. One is to go with something tried, true, works, and perhaps you know it already. And the other is to build your way into a new set of technology. And as you said, John, to start with the problem, start with fairly simple, straightforward, just JavaScript and jQuery, adding in the libraries and other pieces as you need them.
Yeah, and one thing I would add on to that is, and I try to tell a lot of people this who ask me, why did you get back into this? This is about a year and a half, 2 years ago, and I got deeply back in. And I said, you know, there's a lot of people who are really in love with XAML, and I still love XAML. I mean, I really do. And they, God bless them, but they look at HTML5 and JavaScript and they're saying it's terrible and it won't do this and won't do that. And they haven't even looked and tried. So I didn't want to be one of those people. I wanted to be somebody who could say XAML's awesome and I've tried JavaScript and HTML and here's how they compare. So that one of the biggest reasons I got back into it, to be very honest, was I wanted to see, was I missing something? Is there something cool over here that I need to play with? If there isn't, then it just reaffirms that I need to stick on the XAML side. But what I found was just eye-opening. It was amazing to me of, I found a lot of warts, but I also found a lot of opportunity. And now I feel like I'm a better developer for it, because now I can not only do XAML, but I can also do the web side. And I just encourage people who are on the XAML side to say, you know, give it a shot. Try it out. It's changed. It's not the XAML, it's not the JavaScript you knew back in the Netscape Mozilla days.